Hello and welcome to the IABC Ottawa podcast, The Voice. Ottawa is one of the International Association of Business Communicators' largest chapters in the world, and we are pleased to bring you a podcast that covers everything from marketing, strategy, social media, crisis comms, public affairs, and whatever else is relevant to communicators. I'm your host, Sherry Ask. Hello and welcome to episode 144, all about government relations. Now, we haven't talked about government relations since 2019, and that was when we did an episode about working in government relations in a minority government situation. So it was definitely time to revisit this. And in this episode, we're going to take stock of government relations as a field in general. So what's changed for GR professionals, the work they do for their stakeholders, and how they do that work. Now, our guest in this episode is Megan Buttle. Megan is the current president of the Government Relations Institute of Canada, also known as GRIC, and she also leads the digital strategy practice at Earnscliffe Strategies. So she is very well poised to talk about new trends, tactics, and challenges and opportunities GR professionals face. And if you're not in GR, I think you'll still find this interview really helpful because the tactics and communication strategies that Megan talks about, particularly when it comes to how do I make sure that my message is heard, are really transferable. So with that, let's get into the interview. And joining me now is Megan Buttle. Megan is the president of the Government Relations Institute of Canada and leads the digital strategy practice at Earnscliffe Strategies. Megan, thank you for joining me and welcome to The Voice.
Thanks so much for having me, Sherry.
So to start, I'm going to go pretty broad, pretty general. How would you describe the field of government relations in Canada right now?
It's a great place to start. It's definitely a very active environment right now. We're seeing a lot of activity. A lot of things are happening in terms of engagement with parliamentarians and the role of lobbyists we're seeing increasing. It's increasing conversations, increasing engagement with parliamentarians, lots of legislation in front of these individuals at the federal and provincial level. So we're just seeing over the years a growing amount of communications happening. In addition to that, obviously COVID has impacted, and we'll probably get into this in some other questions throughout the interview, but COVID has had an impact on the daily routines of everyone, and that is definitely also being felt by parliamentarians, politicians, political staff, as well as lobbyists. We're seeing, you know, hybrid engagement, we're seeing different types of communications happening, so we're seeing a lot of different changes in how we advocate for policies. And I think one of the biggest outcomes of that has been this new way of approaching advocacy. It's no longer just relationships. It actually is more digital. It's happening on social media. COVID had a bit of a role in that, but it was definitely a trend we saw beforehand as well.
Do you know why there's an increase in the overall activity besides COVID? I guess maybe more things to advocate for.
Yeah, I think there are definitely more things happening with Parliament right now. I think the main impact that the global pandemic had on government relations was there's a lot of funding happening. The federal government has a lot of dollars going out the door, and as a result, a lot of stakeholders are impacted by that funding or have something to say about where that funding should go. So as a result, there are more opportunities for government looking to engage with stakeholders to learn about where they should be putting this money. You can obviously see with the Liberal government, they're investing in a lot of affordability plans. There are a lot of policies that are coming forward with a lot of heavy price tags around healthcare. All of that, you know, definitely pushed forward by the pandemic, and that's changed a lot of registrable activity. But adding this addition of not necessarily needing to be all in person, and now having the activity by government relations experts and lobbyists happening all across the country with Ottawa without necessarily having to be in the city, has added another layer of opportunity to get in front of those people.
Yeah, I can imagine that's quite a change, even just like sort of opening the door, you know, to something that was once probably very Ottawa-centric.
I don't even think people envisioned having receptions, like a hybrid reception. Like that is something that is now completely normal, where 3 years ago, you couldn't even fathom not being physically in the city to have lobby days and activities that are very traditional as part of what, you know, government relations professionals need. But also, it's just completely different now. So you can have completely virtual engagements. We'll have a lot of associations or charitable organizations that don't have the funds to fly everyone to Ottawa. So now they're having a lot more opportunities where they can call someone up, set up a virtual meeting so you can see each other, and developing relationships a little bit differently than they would have a few years ago.
And I guess it could work the other way as well, where if you don't have that virtual option, you're almost like it's not as inclusive in a way, right? Like for the people who can't travel.
Exactly. You'll see, and something else that changed a lot during the pandemic was coalitions. So a lot more voices that had similar issues or were aligned on certain funding projects came together and said, you know, we're more powerful when we can all be at the same table advocating for one change that will have massive impacts all across Canada. So because government was doing some things very, very quickly, when coalitions could come to government and say, hey, we have a whole group of stakeholders already aligned, ready to go to support this plan, government was more inclined to say, okay, that's the path I want to take, because there's already buy-in and there's a lot of information being shared by these stakeholders. So it made advocacy and engagement with government more inclusive when people could either team up with one another or now take these meetings virtual and take them from Vancouver and Calgary and all across the country.
What does that mean? And you touched on this a little bit, but what does that mean for GR professionals in terms of how they're doing their work, in terms of even like the breakup of time, like what they spend their time on, how their days look, how your day looks? How does all of this impact that?
I think everyone's suffering a bit from the hybrid work environment and how to balance that out, going from in-person meetings to virtual meetings. And that back and forth, I think, is challenging for a lot of professionals. And that is definitely something the lobbying industry and GR professionals are feeling and stakeholders are feeling. And I'm sure to an extent, parliamentarians, they're sitting in their offices some days. Some days they're in person, some days they're virtual. And that obviously, you know, can be a bit of a challenge to juggle. But lobbying, I think the ability to have more voices and the public policy process is always positive. And lobbying has had a bit of an uphill battle when it comes to its reputation. It was largely impacted by a lot of negativity coming from the states, but lobbying in Canada is very different. It's registered, it is open and transparent. You can go and see what people are talking about, how many times they're talking to government. All that is accessible. So we're seeing communications and activity go up, and that's all being registered. And as a result, the number of meetings happening on Parliament Hill with parliamentarians, political staff, and departments are just very intense now. And at the same time, they are trying to balance that, you know, in person versus also having a lot of virtual meetings still.
And what's changed, do you think, for stakeholders?
I think the biggest change for stakeholders, there have been many things. One is there is more opportunity to shape policy, but policy is moving very quickly. So you need to be at the table and there's an opportunity to be there, but you need to be very responsive to what's happening in the environment. The other challenge I would say that we're all suffering from is so many issues keep confronting us. So we go through the global pandemic and then we're in a healthcare crisis and then there's a war happening and there's always something. And that means that political attention is being pulled in very different directions all the time. And there are a lot of very pressing and very important things. So for stakeholders, trying to break through probably has become a really big challenge. And I know for lobbyists, trying to find the space to have those conversations can be, you know, really hard. And sometimes you're getting booked 2-3 weeks out from when you put in the request to talk about something that's really, really important for organizations at the time they're making that request. So you have to be more proactive. Stakeholders have to be giving a lot of thought to what they're doing for months ahead. And I think that was a bit of a change because previously, you know, if you had relationships with these individuals on the Hill, you had the opportunity to have, you know, informal touch bases with them. You could call them and get more information on a more regular basis. this now, schedules are just really packed. There's so many people happening to cross paths with these individuals on a day-to-day basis. And as a result, another thing it means for stakeholders, they've looked at other communications tactics to support what has been traditional lobbying, face-to-face meetings, intelligence gathering, monitoring of issues. Now there's this whole open space of social media and digital advocacy, and that's been really a great opportunity, but also it's a whole different area of expertise, and that presents its own challenges as well.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the digital tactics, media monitoring, or not even just media monitoring, but social media monitoring, using those tools to communicate, information overload. How have stakeholders' expectations changed? And is the digital component what PR, and I assume it would depend on the GR professional, but what you spend most of your time on now?
I would say that the digital aspect and social media is never, at least, what I can see for the next, I'll say 5 to 10 years, I don't think it'll be a replacement for lobbying. It will never be a replacement for traditional GR. That still has such an important aspect, as you can imagine, a personal relationship or a relationship that's being built over time with individuals that get to know the stakeholder and know what issues they are knowledgeable about and can funnel in a really effective way into public policy. That's still fundamental and very important. The addition of digital, it does create an added opportunity. The challenge being, you do have to be an expert. You can waste dollars. You can waste energy on social media. As you can imagine, Twitter is a fire hose of information. So if you're going on there without a strategy, there's a good chance you're wasting a lot of the resources you're committing to it. So being very thoughtful with it is so critical. It's also really important to understand that the government space and the individuals that matter to a specific stakeholder is probably only, a handful of individuals. Unless you're representing the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, where they have a wide scope of policies and members, a lot of associations and charities are very focused on one or two policy pieces. So for them, they just need to talk to 10, 20 people maybe, and that seems like a lot, or parliamentarians. There are not a ton of individuals you need to communicate to. So you can be strategic and you can be targeted, but it also means that if you're not relying on those targeted methods, you might just be, yelling into the wind. And that can be really hard and challenging to not see what you are probably putting a lot of effort into really bearing any fruit. And so you go back to traditional lobbying. And I would say, as much as traditional lobbying is not going to go away, it's almost impossible to rely on a single channel approach to engage with parliamentarians and policy staff and things like that. Those individuals are consuming information across a variety of platforms every day, much like all of us. They're on Instagram, they're on Twitter, they're going to National News Watch, and then they're having a meeting with a stakeholder. So you have to kind of, think outside the box of that 30-minute window you could have with an individual on the Hill and say, okay, where else can I reach them with our communications? How can I talk to them about a policy that matters to me? And go to the channels where they are. Often, the other thing I see a lot of the times is associations and companies expect policymakers to come to them. And that's often not the case. Again, they're busy people. We're all busy people. So you do have to be very proactive in making sure that your message is getting in front of them and breaking through a lot of the noise that is happening. And probably, it is very crowded space nowadays.
I'm going to ask a loaded question, but how do you do that? Say you can't get the attention of the person you need to because, or the group that you need to because of noise, and noise maybe isn't the right word, but other breaking news topics,
totally.
The inflation, the healthcare crisis, like you mentioned, and your tactics aren't working. What would your advice be?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think The first thing I would start to do is look at the material and the information I'm starting to share. If it's not breaking through, maybe it's because you're not creating the message that is resonating with that audience, or it's not connecting with the government's agenda. You know, if you have an ability to say, this is my story and this is how it connects to you, policymaker, and why it matters to what you're already doing or considering doing, you'll probably have a much better chance of relating to someone, right? You want to make sure that you're tailoring your message and your advocacy ask for the individual you're trying to meet with. That's the first thing. Look at your collateral, look at your information. Customization goes a long way. We all value that as a consumer of product, of information. The same goes for policymakers. So if you can make it as easy as possible for them to understand your point of view, you will have a much higher rate of success in terms of them remembering who you are and what your position is on very important policies. The second thing I would consider is organic social media is really hard. It relies on them being followers of your accounts. It relies on them being already caught in your spider web of knowing who you are. Not every stakeholder has that luxury. So we do often recommend looking at paid tactics. Social media marketing and advertising for the purposes of advocacy can make sure that you're only spending dollars on the individual eyeballs and people that matter to your policy. So we can get really granular the same way that, you know, marketing for consumers can do. We can do that for politicians, and we can do that for issues, and we can do that for your members. And I say we because there is a group of individuals in government relations and advocacy spaces that are starting to specialize in this and really support saying, okay, these are your lobbying tactics. This is how you should communicate. But then also you should consider these optional add-ons, because the other great element of paid tactics is you don't have to have, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. It's completely scalable, and it can be an investment that you make, you know, for a few weeks during the budget cycle. That's really, really critical. Or you can look at something longer term. You want to build your reputation up over time because you're potentially very new to the lobbying space. So it can be really an effective way of you investing dollars into platforms and then also seeing the metrics. Something that's really absent from lobbying is, how do you qualify and quantify impact? And sometimes traditionally in lobbying, status quo is great. Like, that's what you want, which is really hard to justify to people that are not in government. When we use, you know, social media, digital, paid marketing and advertising for the purposes of advocacy outcomes, we can actually go into the back end of these platforms and say, okay, who's it reaching? What departments are seeing my message? And we can quantify the metrics associated with your policy asks, which is a really great new tool, I would say, that has not been around for a long time, but a lot of stakeholders are seeing a lot of benefit. Because then they can talk to people outside of government relations, outside of communications, and say, look at what I've done. And that becomes really helpful to reinforce the value of policymaking.
It sounds like so much of GR work is just based on, like, educating people about what the best thing to do is. What do you do when you're pitching something? Because all of the ideas you shared just sound amazing. And the stakeholder or the client isn't on board or thinks you should do something else.
Totally. And I think more and more stakeholders are open to trying because they see other people in the space and they're like, I want that. So, you know, casework goes a long way, and showing them the impact of what other campaigns have done and been very successful at, again, because we can quantify it. It's a really great way to go and say, like, look at what we were able to accomplish when we used all of these different tactics that are available in your toolbox right now. But it does start, and we often say, you know, it's an education campaign first. People have to see your brand, your story, your position before you can start asking them for something. It seems so intuitive, but often we forget. You can't go in and be like, I need this, I need this. You need to kind of soften the ground and make sure that they know you're alongside for what they're, you know, they being government are trying to accomplish, or the departments that are really crafting these policies. You have to show that alignment and show your position, and then you can go into asking. So I think, you know, the way that I often talk about it is also the scalable nature. You know, they've come to Earnscliff or another agency to talk about government relations. we can say, let's try something. Let's add in, you know, a social media campaign for a 2 to 3 month period, see how it works, what messages are getting the most clicks to your website and your advocacy papers and that white paper you really put a lot of time and effort into. Let's make sure we drive some additional visibility. And usually with that, we're also able to show them the impact and then give them other options. As I said, it's similar to like traditional communications. You can add on to it and look for unique opportunities that are really relevant to that specific organization or association. I think the biggest way to also separate and encourage, you know, these new models and new engagement tools is to customize them based on what the client is trying to talk about. And oftentimes we're just like, be on Twitter. And it's like, well, why am I going to be on Twitter? Like, you have to think very holistically about who you're trying to communicate and also what you're communicating on, because that might not necessarily be Twitter that is the best platform for you.
Yeah, for sure. It could almost even be a distraction, right? Like pulling your resources. Yeah. It sounds like there's a lot going on, a lot of learning that even has to happen to be in the field right now. For someone looking to get into government relations or do it, what advice would you have for them right now? Or what would you want them to know about the industry right now?
I always start with understanding of your audience. I think, you know, we talk about digital advocacy, government relations, one-on-one meetings. It all is really founded in understanding who you're speaking to. And this is so transferable from public relations and communications. If you know who you're talking to and you know how their day works and how their policies are formulated and like who's making decisions and putting input into what's being developed, that will really guide you then on what your message is, what your channels need to be, and additionally, what tactics are best. Also understanding what is very unique in government relations, it is a cycle. We have, you know, a House of Commons that sits on a schedule. Policies go through a very particular process through the House of Commons and the Senate. And all of those things, the more you know about the behaviors and the approach to how policies are developed, you can then really refine that channel plan. And like if you're on social media, so understanding your audience is critical. And then second, I would say really getting into the nuts and bolts of Parliament can be a really cool advantage. And I think where I kind of started to move into the digital advocacy space was I could love politics and I could follow it and I understand how Parliament works, but I don't necessarily want to lead on, you know, intel gathering and monitoring of parliamentary activities. So I got to use social and digital, but only because I spend a lot of time understanding how this audience works through policy development.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you talked about the cycle too, because I think that is like one of those key things for the field. Megan, is there anything else you want to say or anything else I should ask?
I think the only thing I'd like wrap up with is, you know, there's a lot of opportunity outside of Ottawa now, which is so good. It became so much of a bubble, we always say. I'm in Ottawa physically, so I often, you know, there is this kind of echo chamber that happens within government at the federal level, and it also happens provincially as well. But because, you know, the global pandemic was not great, but one of the best things it did was allowed more opportunity for stakeholders and individuals all across the country, not having to be in Ottawa physically, to have an opportunity to start talking about what matters to them. And I think it makes better policy, it makes better communications. And I think government is listening and has the opportunity to engage with more diverse voices. So it's a growing industry. And I would say communications is totally transferable to government relations if you have a keen interest in politics. And then government relations is starting this bridge into really cool communications tactics to support it. And that's been a fun evolution. And I think it's only going to get bigger. So it's definitely one to watch. And I love that you're looking into the space. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on and sharing your insights. It was wonderful to get a look at where government relations is at. I want to say post-COVID, hoping that we stay post-COVID.
Yeah.
Because I think there's been a lot of change that happened. So thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you.
I And that is it for this episode of IABC Ottawa's The Voice. Thank you so much for listening. The Voice podcast is produced by myself, Sherry Ask, and Leslie Quintal. If you like this episode, please share it, subscribe, and send us a review or feedback. You can reach IABC Ottawa on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at IABC Ottawa, as well as on LinkedIn. You can check out our website, ottawa.iabc.com, for info on all IABC Ottawa networking, professional development events, future meetups, and more. And while you are there, click on Jobline to find your next opportunity or the right communications professional to join your team. I'm your host, Sherry Ask, and until next time, let the music play.